You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 22. This minute opens with Vickers saying, "David, why don't you make the doctors a drink?" and ends with Charlie saying, "Miss Vickers, is there an agenda here you're not telling us about?" I love how Vickers looms over everyone else, especially Shaw, who's only about 5'3". Vickers is a great character who was made greater because of the casting. She has the right physicality, and evidently Charlize was allowed to expand on her character quite a bit. There is a constant hum in the background whenever they are on the ship. This is something you can hear in Alien as well. If Ridley's audio commentary for Alien is any indication, it was apparently his idea. I like this choice. It's a subtle reminder that we are in space and inside a spaceship. Sound design should also help to build the world and create the ambience. In this scene in particular, we get a subtle tinkling sound of the crystal chandelier, which are more than likely Swarovski crystals knowing how this movie spent its budget. Speaking of, according to Box Office Mojo, the budget was $130 million, which is pretty average for a genre movie. Like most superhero movies are around $130 to $170 mil, but that's crazy when you consider Alien was made on just $11 million. They accomplished so much on so little. I wish I could dig up the exact quote, but in an interview with Spider-Man and Evil Dead director Sam Raimi, maybe on the Nerdist podcast, he was talking about how ridiculous things can become when you're given a huge budget. When he made the Evil Dead movies, he was forced to get creative. They were making all sorts of improvised camera dollies and effects. Then he joked about how, working on Spider-Man, he would have people suggest things like build elaborate rigs to spin the actor upside down, and Raimi would be like, why don't we just turn the camera upside down? I also think in that Hollywood environment, everyone has been conditioned to say yes to every request that the director makes. That said, I found myself doing that on production before too, where the director will come up with all these elaborate and complicated ideas, and things will quickly get out of hand. Most of the time, I do have that moment of, hold on a minute, what are we doing here? The simple solution is the best one. We gotta just take a few steps back here. Side note, holy shit, Alien Covenant was made for only $97 million, which is still considerable. That's the budget for each of the Lord of the Rings movies, but noticeably less than Prometheus. I wouldn't say Covenant feels smaller in scale at all. I haven't really delved into Prometheus's performance commercially before, but this feels like an appropriate moment. It had a budget of $130 million and earned $400 million worldwide, so not bad, but my modern standard is not great. That's basically breaking even. This is similar to Tron Legacy, which came out a couple of years prior. Budget of $170 mil, earned $400 mil, which is well below Disney standards and probably a major reason we never got a Tron sequel, which breaks my black android heart. Tron Legacy is another movie which I'm absolutely obsessed with, and have watched countless times and listened to the soundtrack even more often than that. I like stories about AI with daddy issues and cool costumes, what can I say? Maybe in the distant future I could do a Tron Legacy minute. But yes, if you look at the list of the highest grossing films of all time, a majority of them are Disney films. They were likely hoping for Tron to earn something around $1 billion, so by their standards it was a flop, especially when you consider the humongous marketing and merchandising campaign behind it. And now that Alien is in the hands of Disney, I mean, just looking at it from a commercial perspective, they'd be looking at these numbers going, well, what incentive do we have to make a third prequel movie? Please do, Disney. Please do not deprive me of this. Prometheus didn't have quite the same amount of merchandise as Tron, but it was heavily promoted, and being part of a popular franchise, it seemed like success was a sure thing. Overall, Prometheus's performance was average. Average box office performance and average critical response. That said, averages really don't do justice for a film like Prometheus. It was a very divisive film, as I've mentioned before. People either love it or hate it. The response is never lukewarm. On Metacritic, it was rated the 4th most discussed and 6th most shared movie of 2012. In a year loaded with competition like Dark Knight Rises and The Avengers, Prometheus inspired a huge response. It's hard for movies to really penetrate popular culture to that extent anymore. But there were so many reviews and... there were so many reviews and parodies and reaction videos and discussions and debates and all sorts of things. This was a movie a lot of people felt compelled to talk about because it was so controversial. The Metacritic score is 65 of 100, with a majority of them positive or mixed, and 73% critic score and 68% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. Most other sites seem to indicate an average response of around 60 to 70% too. So for all the vitriol this film inspired, it did just fine, and most people seem to appreciate the spectacle. I have to wonder what Prometheus would have been like if there had been no ties to the alien universe. If it was just a story about creation and androids, or if they had kept the alien connection. But maybe we weren't sure until we actually got to the end of Prometheus, or hell, even Covenant. Yeah, imagine that, you know, you get to the end of Covenant, and it's only then, you know, you see all the variations, the Neomorph and what have you, and you're like, that looks kind of familiar. And it's only at the very end of Covenant that you go, oh shit, an actual Xenomorph, I see where this is going now. I think that would have been quite fun, although these days it's so hard to keep anything secret in movies, so good luck with that. I think the problem is alien fans have a very specific idea of what they want from an alien movie, and Prometheus did not deliver on that promise for a lot of people. But let's analyze that for a minute. What do fans want from an alien film? Hanging out in the alien fandom is an interesting experience, because unlike, say, Star Wars or any other major movie franchise, Alien does not have much continuity. If it weren't for the Xenomorphs or Ripley, each of the original four Alien films could have been their own entirely separate films. As such, people are fans of different aspects of these movies. There are those who are purists and see only Alien as a masterpiece while the rest are pale successors. They love the subtlety of the horror, the intelligence of the plot, and the slow building tension and atmosphere. Others much prefer the Americana machismo, gun porn, bug hunt of aliens, while other people genuinely and passionately love the bleak, nihilistic Alien 3, or the campiness of Alien 4. How do you distill such disparate elements into one core foundation? The truth is, you don't, because you can't. It amazes me that fans can love the original four, and even forgive the AVP movies, but they have an almost irrational hatred for the prequels. When the truth is, the prequels are just as similar and different and successful and flawed as the other sequels. Now this is quite a hard thing to prove empirically. This is purely anecdotal based on my own experiences within the alien community. I cannot discuss the alien prequels in a general alien forum. I have to go to prequel-specific groups. I found that the prequels are by far the most popular alien movies on Tumblr, for instance. You know, if I were to go to Reddit or YouTube or Facebook or pretty much any other social media site, the mainstream trend is to attack the prequels. No one actually wants to have a discussion, and for me that's quite boring. I think there's a lot there to be discussed. But on Tumblr, it's pretty big. And yes, Fassbender is a big reason for that. His fans, teenage girls and young women, are the largest demographic utilizing that platform. And honestly, that's not a bad thing. It's not often science fiction has such a female-dominant fan base. That said, the biggest female-dominated science fictional fantasy fan bases all started off as primarily male. Doctor Who and Supernatural spring to mind first, originally targeted at a male demographic, and now women are the biggest fans and fan creators. Again, this is just anecdotal observations. I don't have the data to back it up or anything. It could simply be that men and women express their fandoms differently, but even at a glance, I tend to be able to get a sense of what the primary audience for a show is. Game of Thrones, for example, has super wide appeal. I don't think there's any one demographic that primarily appeals to. Where something like Sherlock has a rabid fan following of mostly women, and My Little Pony, for whatever reason, has a largely male fan base. By and large, the fans of the prequels focus on David. A majority of the fan art and fan fiction and what little cosplay there is of David. whereas the general alien fandom is all about the Xenomorph and Ripley. Either way, I found this fandom produces more thoughtful analyses, more so than most other franchises. There's a lot of potential for different readings in all the alien films about sexuality, feminism, artificial intelligence, biology, symbolism, religion, and so on. I am really fascinated by fandoms in general as a kind of sociological, anthropological study, but it's rare to find this kind of thing documented anywhere. The Star Trek fandom inspired a wealth of books and documentaries, but Alien, not so much. Alright, back to the movie. We see David's magical drink-pouring skills. I think the way androids in real life will eventually move will be so strange to us. They'll be kind of stiff and unnatural in some ways, and in others they'll be impossibly smooth and calculated and coordinated. Just like David. The way he's pouring the vodka without even looking at it implies that he doesn't rely primarily on his eyes. He seems to be able to make observations and calculations about his movements and environment without the aid of vision. In short, it's a lovely little touch. We cut from the discussion between the human characters to this almost absurd shot of David pouring vodka in a way no human could. That's something Fassbender and Scott talk about often, that there is something a bit comedic about David. They're deliberately injecting humor into his scenes. He is a ridiculous, melodramatic character, and I love/hate him for it. The cocktail shaker looks a lot like one of the ampules. It's just an ordinary silver one. I wonder if this is just a coincidence, or did they go out of their way to foreshadow with the props like this? The sounds of David preparing the drinks is fairly high in the audio track. It's like he's asserting himself even in scenes where he is a minor player, which seems very much like him. He is forced into a life of servitude, to fade into the background, but he's clearly trying to break free of those bonds at all times. We saw how vibrant he was on his own. This David we see now is so restrained. Unlike Walter, who seems perfectly happy with his life, it feels like David is internally screaming every moment he is forced to deal with these hairless apes. By contrast, Vickers, as usual, is in control of almost every scene she is in. Here she talks to Holloway and Shaw like they are children. She doesn't hesitate to speak in a condescending tone and dismiss the entire purpose of the mission. She tells them not to engage with any native beings should they encounter any. This may be the first time she's ever had such autonomous authority. She would usually have answered to Wayland and likely a whole board of directors. But now, she is entirely in charge. She's cutting loose a bit. If Charlie and Elizabeth had met her before leaving Earth, and they likely did, she would have had to hold her tongue in front of Wayland. This would explain why they are so casual when they enter her module, only to realize what a bitch she is. In the background is a large screen which has shifting displays. First, it is a wintry environment. Then it transitions to a warmer scene of a wheat field. The snowy background makes sense for Vickers' character, but I'm not sure if there is any significance to the wheat beyond it simply being an appealing color palette. And yellow is a recurring colour in Prometheus. One could suppose that wheat is a symbol of fertility, and that is a recurring theme in the Alien franchise. We see wheat feature prominently in Alien Covenant 2, but I'm more inclined to say there's not much symbolism going on there. But as an aside, I would definitely want to live in this module. I mean, you can watch movies on that giant screen, and the whole place is so slick and trendy. Yeah, it's my ideal place. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. Reviews on iTunes and on Facebook, those would be appreciated. I have a coffee account. Throw me some dollars if you want. Pay for hosting and advertising. That would be greatly appreciated.